This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We have made it. Week one of the college football season is here. We've got some big time matchups. Three games this weekend between ranked teams, including one in Las Vegas between USC and LSU. And like we've done the last 2 years, we're back for another year. Myself, Tim Murray, Matt Heumann's going to break down the card, give you our best bets, go through all the big games, off-the-radar games, late-night action. So, Matt, we're here, week one. I'm curious, just before we dive into the games, for you, a gentleman who likes to spray the board, you and I like to have our fair share of bets, how do you approach week one under most normal circumstances?
That's a good question, because sometimes you want to be conservative with so many question marks about these teams. If you need more proof, let's look at week zero, all right? We had an 11-point underdog and a neutral win outright. We had a 14-point home dog that should have won the game, a 28-point home dog that should have won the game, and a 41-point dog that was in a tie game in the third quarter last week. And in the first three games, you essentially had the – you had sharp money – betting the favorites like they knew, like they had the next day's newspaper, right? Like they knew the score. So I don't respect sharp money as much early in the season in a college football market, because nobody really knows what these teams are like. That's why, you know, typically I play a lot of dogs, and I play more dogs early in the season. Bettors tend to believe the hype that they read, the preseason hype from the beat writers, TV, radio, whatever it may be. And teams like Florida State, Montana State, SMU did not live up to the hype last week. Tim, you and I were both disappointed in Hawaii.
Yes, we were.
Hawaii did not live up to the hype last week. So, I typically try to stay conservative, but also it can be dependent on how the board breaks, you know, and how the matchups look to you. There's going to be some years where there might be a lot more appealing matchups where I might fire plays all over the board. That's not really the case. I think I'm a little bit on the conservative side here in week one this year.
Yeah, I would tend to agree on that. And obviously, too, worth noting, and many of you who are listening to this podcast know this, but if you're new, jumping in, welcome aboard. Hit us up with a 5-star review. But, you know, these odds have been up for about 2 months. And, you know, we did see some line movement. We're recording this, full disclosure, on Thursday afternoon. So we're not going to break down the Thursday games. And who knows how it'll play out, but crazy line movement in North Dakota State and Colorado in a game that has been up there for 2 months, a lot of under money hitting the market. But the way we're going to structure it, we're going to look at the biggest games. We'll take a break, a little off the radar type of games. And of course, we'll always give you a best bet recap. So let's get to the biggest games of the weekend.
The main course.
All right, a little friendly drop there from Ryan Hunter. Hopefully that went off without a hitch there. Number 14, Clemson versus Georgia. Noon Eastern, ABC. This game took place in 2021. These two teams played on a neutral field. Clemson was a 3-point favorite to open up the season in 2021. They lost that game 10-3. And right now, across the market, Georgia is a 13.5-point favorite, total of 48.5. You know, Matt, it's been a lot of negativity surrounding Clemson this offseason because of Dabo and his unwillingness to go into the portal. This is a team that I feel like is a little bit undervalued. Georgia loses Brock Bowers, loses Ladd McConkey. Also, we don't know the status of ETN, their running back, who could be suspended after a DUI this offseason. I lean a little bit towards the dog here, but I'm wondering if we could get a full 14 by the time kickoff rolls around because of the belief that Georgia, with that number one by their name, is going to go out and take it to the Clemson Tigers.
Well, I mean, what are we going to get from Cade Klubnik, the Clemson quarterback? I think we'll get better play from him this season. He was not very good last year with 19 TD passes, 19 picks. Was not as much of a running threat as you would like him to be. There was just a lot of things went wrong with the Tigers last season. Hey, this Georgia team's going to be a little bit shorthanded. Some key players are going to be out, it appears, for this game. Does it matter that much when you're talking about a program like Georgia where you have so much quality depth? Probably not that much. Tim, I'll make this short and sweet. Dabo Swinney has he's fallen behind. He's behind the curve, and he's catching a lot of criticism for that, as he should. At the same time, I don't think Clemson's fallen that far off. So what I always try to say is try to remember, and I say this a lot, is that week zero, week one, week two, the betting public loves to pound the favorites in college football. There's so many unknowns, and it's a safe bet to bet the to lay it with the favorite, right? It's a safe bet. A lot of people will say, well, let's just lay it with Georgia. I'm gonna take Clemson here, but I'm going to wait for it to hit 14. If it does not hit 14, it's not going to be a play for me. I'm not taking 13.5. But you can write that down. That will be an official play if this number does go to 14. I think it will. Certainly in some of the square books, or, you know, it might go to 14 in pretty much every book by Saturday.
Yeah, I'm with you. 14 if we get there. It was 14 a little bit during the offseason. Phil Maffa, I love him as a running back. Absolute beast. And pretty good wide receivers. My biggest worry would be, as you alluded to with Georgia, issues from a from injury standpoint. Clemson cornerback could be a concern there from an injury standpoint there with the Tigers. A game that big noon kickoff, our friend Chris Felica will be there. Penn State, number 8 in the country, Matt, at West Virginia, noon Eastern on Fox. And this has been a game where a lot of dog money has hit the market here, as over the offseason, it was as high as 10.5 in favor of Penn State, and now down sits at 8. So the market's moving. Who knows where this will ultimately land? And this was a game that I was initially intrigued a bit by. West Virginia did not get to the window. Penn State, I'll say this, they upgraded at both their coordinators, bringing in Andy Koltynicki from Kansas, as well as Tom Allen from Indiana. So what's your play on this one? Are you looking at the dog in Morgantown?
I'm not sure how much faith I've got in the James Franklin Tom Allen combination. I do think Andy Koltynicki is going to be an upgrade offensive coordinator. Drew Aller as a freshman, 25 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. But numbers do lie in some cases, and he was not that good. And the losses to Ohio State and Michigan, Aller 28 for 64, 261 yards. You know, he was good against the Penn State played bully ball. They were good against the bad teams, or the teams they should beat, and they couldn't step up against a better competition. I remember vividly, Tim, when the Nittany Lions punched one in late against the Mountaineers last year. It made it 38-15 in Happy Valley, and that was kind of a classless move by James Allen to punch in, or James Franklin to punch in that last touchdown. Last year at this time, I was really talking about West Virginia as a team I thought was going to be on the rise in the Big 12, and Neil Brown was on the hot seat at this time a year ago. He ended up winning 9 games and had a really good season. I think that's going to continue for the most part. Now, I'm not the biggest Garrett Green court fan, the quarterback for the Mountaineers, but it does help that an experienced quarterback is back with an offense that can run the ball, a physical offensive line. Got a few questions about the defense here, but, you know, I love home dogs, and I think, you know, it's a lot to ask Penn State to go on the road here to Morgantown and lay more than a touchdown, and I did take 8.5 with the Mountaineers in this spot. I don't know if West Virginia is the type of team that can contend for a Big 12 title, but I know that it's at least the middle of the pack or a respectable team in the Big 12. And I think, you know, home dogs like this that are well coached and off a really good season playing with confidence, I think should be live.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right about West Virginia. 38-15, the score, late touchdown, gets that game to get the cover for those who recall there in Happy Valley. So West Virginia will no doubt be rocking for this one, as it'll be a noon Eastern kickoff for the boys in Morgantown. 3:30 Eastern, Matt. Miami, the buzz of the offseason, number 19 in the country at Florida. This game will be on ABC, part of that ABC triple header. And this is a game I think you and I have talked about a little bit. There's a lot of hype regarding this Miami team this year. When you look at their defensive front, when you look at Cam Ward coming in as their quarterback, Damian Martinez coming in, the transfer from Oregon State. You know, Sunbelt Billy, a name that you love to throw out there. This is a big spot for him, a big year for him. Hardest schedule in the country for Florida. We've talked about it ad nauseum here on the podcast. But the thing I'll make a note about this is, Matt, everyone keeps talking about the schedule. I'm guilty of it on this podcast, but that schedule hasn't started yet, right? It doesn't. The hardest part of the schedule starts in November. Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, Florida State. They have Tennessee in October, UCF in October, Texas A&M week three. It is as hard as you could imagine from a schedule standpoint, but there's been a lot of disrespect out there, I feel like, for Florida this year. And I like the Gators in this spot. I really want the three. There was a three earlier this week at DraftKings around, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. Unfortunately, wasn't able to grab that. So it's sitting at 2.5. There's some twos out there on offshore spots. You know, Graham Mertz, he got a lot of crap because he didn't live up to his, you know, expectations, had that opener with Wisconsin where he threw 5 touchdowns during the COVID season. But numerically, he was actually a pretty good quarterback last year. 73% completion percentage, 20 touchdowns, 3 picks. Doesn't really stretch the ball downfield, so that certainly is a concern. But Cam Ward, if you watch some of his games against Washington State, Matt, which I know you did, he can throw some turnover-worthy plays out there, gets a little too loose with the ball. I think the Gators are definitely live here. They will be a play for me. I haven't decided if I want to wait for the three, go money line, but ultimately, Florida will be on my card on Saturday. I think they have a good chance of winning this game.
Yeah, I'm with you here. Actually, I did get the +3 on this game with Florida, but not a big bet. And I'm going to try to bet it again if it goes back to 3 on Saturday. Mario Cristobal, not a coach you want to lay it with on the road. Hurricanes played 3 big games in the ACC on the road last year and lost all 3. And this line, pinballing 2.5, 3, 2.5. I do think it's going to go back to 3. Like I said, favorites get a lot of play early in the college football season. Sun Belt Billy, 11-14 in 2 years of Florida. He's probably headed back to the Sun Belt if he can't navigate this schedule, and I'm not sure he can. I have serious doubts about it. But that doesn't mean anything when you're handicapping this game. So you got to set that aside, you know, because right now the Gators still have hopes that, you know, they can have a big season if they beat the Hurricanes. It's kind of a jump start here. Cam Ward, considered the top quarterback in the transfer portal out of Washington State. He had 48 touchdown passes the last 2 years, but he's a little bit inconsistent, and I think he's being overhyped by the media. So I'm not really fearing betting against Cam Ward in this spot. He's on his 3rd college team in, 4 years? 3 years, Tim.
Yep.
And he came from Incarnate Word in San Antonio to Washington State. Now he's in Miami. There's a lot of hype and a lot of expectations for Cam Ward. Damian Martinez, I think, is going to be a big addition. I really like the Oregon State running back who's now in the Hurricanes' backfield, 1,185 yards last season. He's a tough runner, so I like that combination. I think Ward's being a little bit overhyped. And Graham Mertz, if you watched him at Wisconsin, you would say, man, he's one of the weaker quarterbacks in the Big Ten. But he led the SEC in completion percentage, as you mentioned, a 20-3 TD to pick ratio. He's behind a solid offensive line. Montrell Johnson Jr. is a good running back. And I think the home field's going to mean something in this rivalry. You know, which coach is going to screw it up worse? This is not Garry Kasparov and Bobby Fischer playing chess on Saturday in Gainesville. I like Florida. I like the home dog. And, buy it to 3 if you have to. But I think 3 is probably going to show up sometime on Saturday.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Late night, or not late night, we like the late night games, which we'll get to as the show goes on. But the primetime game on Saturday on ABC, number 7 Notre Dame at number 20 Texas A&M. This has been a line that has moved pretty steadily towards Texas A&M all throughout the summer months, was ping-ponging around pick and 1. And now, Matt, it is 3 across the board. And who knows if we get to a 3 and a hook. I would doubt that. I would imagine that would be the resistance point. A lot to get to from a storyline perspective on this game, where you've got Notre Dame starting left tackles, a true freshman in Anthony Knapp. He is replacing Charles Jagasaw, who was lost to the year with a pec injury. Good injury news on this game, where Howard Cross, sixth-year senior on the D-line, Marcus Freeman said in his media availability on Thursday, he's 100%. There will be no pitch count. So that is great news for Notre Dame from that standpoint. You bring in a new offensive coordinator and Mike Denbrock from LSU, which I think a lot of people are excited about, Matt, there for the Irish. Riley Leonard comes in as their new quarterback. And on the flip side, you've got Riley Leonard going up against his old coach. So I know I've got a lot of thoughts on this game. I think you and I have a common play on this game as well. The total sits at 46 and a half, even some offshores at time of record going to 45 and a half. So how do you break down Notre Dame Texas A&M on Saturday night in College Station?
You know, first of all, I think Mike Elko is going to be a big coaching upgrade for the Aggies, and his former quarterback Riley Leonard is ironically the quarterback he's going to face here in the opener. So some pretty good storylines of this game. I'm fired up for this game. I don't think it's going to be a great watch in terms of if you like offensive excitement here. This Notre Dame offensive line's got some issues. Eventually, Tim, I think it could be a really good offensive line, but you're talking about the first game with some inexperience on the road in a place like College Station. That's a tough assignment. And again, with a new quarterback and a new offense, I can't expect a lot out of the Irish offense in this game. And Texas A&M's strong on the defensive front. Nick Scorton, transfer from Purdue, helps beef up that pass rush. I think the Aggies are going to be really good, I would say, on the front seven on defense. Notre Dame's solid everywhere on defense. This Irish D is going to be legit. That's why I think you're headed for a low-scoring game here. Some of the values lost. I lean Aggies, but I didn't bet it. And now at -3, you've lost a little bit of value here, and I don't want to play it necessarily. But I did bet under 46.5, and Tim, I didn't even get the best number there because that number was at 49 for the total. But I still like it under 46.5. I think this is going to be a 2017 type of game. And maybe if it's a high-scoring game, it would be 23-20.
Yeah, I would be a bit surprised if one of these teams ran away and hid unless you get turnovers. Six combined starts for the Notre Dame offensive line. But, you know, defensively, you alluded to it, Al Golden, year three as a defensive coordinator for Notre Dame. He's got a six-year senior in Jack Kaiser as his linebacker. A lot of other pieces there that they're going to be rotating in. And Christian Gray has had rave reviews, Notre Dame's corner on the other side of Benjamin Morrison, the All-American. And Adon Schuler won out as the other safety, along with Xavier Watts, beating out Rod Hurd, who was a, you know, very productive player at Northwestern. So the defense is loaded up for Notre Dame. I think Connor Wegman, there's a lot of questions about him. Sure. They did lose Reuben Owens to a season-ending injury. Texas A&M did. That's a big loss there. Explosive player there in the backfield. So limited depth a little bit for Texas A&M. I'm with you. I think this is going to be a great game. Tons of storylines. And I was able to grab the 49 over the summer. I still would play it at 46.5. And we like to do numbers that are out there right now. No one likes to hear someone boast about, hey, the number I got. So 46.5 is still a bet that I would make, and I'm going to make it again. I would be – look, you and I think, have a love-hate relationship with totals.
Sure. Okay.
And, you know, I'm sure Riley Leonard's going to throw two pick sixes in the first quarter, and, you know, we're going to be screaming at the television. But I just think at the end of the day, you've got a defensive head coach in Mike Elko, defensive head coach in Marcus Freeman. I think both of these teams do not trust their offensive line very much, and I like the under. So I think it's a slugfest, I would play it as, you know, low as, you know, 45.5 probably, but get the 46.5 because, hey, if you can get that extra point, why not roll with it? One more game before we take a break, and I know one that you talked about on Jimmy Ott's show down in Baton Rouge when he was out here at Stadium Swim. You know this LSU fan base is going to travel in droves out to Vegas. They always do, wherever they go. This will be 7:30 Eastern, ABC, on Sunday night. My initial lean in this game was going to be look at the dog here, but I do think this USC front on defense is going to be tested quite a bit by a bullying LSU offensive line. Per Phil Steele, he ranks them the sixth best offensive line in the country. Of course, they lose Jaden Daniels. They lose Brian Thomas, Malik Nabers. Logan Diggs was their leading rusher a year ago. He's now at Ole Miss. But I'm curious, your perspective on this game is, you know, Jimmy Ott, a friend of ours, and he's going to be on VSiN Primetime Thursday night as well. I don't really know what to expect from either one of these teams as Miller Moss steps in to replace Caleb Williams. A lot of changeover on that defensive staff for USC that I know you're pretty excited about, at least from the coaching staff that they brought in there for the Trojans.
Yeah, our friend Jimmy Obb from ESPN Radio Baton Rouge, if you get a chance, Tim, ask him about his new girlfriend.
Oh,
and watch him blush on the air. His new girlfriend's about half his age. So, all right. So LSU was a 6-point dog, a 6-point favorite. And I thought that when all these Tigers fans poured into Vegas this week, and there's going to be roughly 30,000. That's what we're hearing. And I think maybe 1,500 of those fans are going to be at Stadium Swim at Circa on Friday afternoon. I thought the LSU side was going to get bet up, and maybe, you know, it was 6 across the board. I thought it might get bet to 7. I was going to grab USC plus 7. And at 4.5, I'm not doing anything with the game right now. I'm not doing anything with the total. I always feel like defenses should be ahead of the offenses at this point, especially now when you've got so many new pieces and, you know, transfers and all these offenses. I thought expectations were too high for DJ in the Florida State offense last week. And, you know, here, how great would this matchup have been a year ago when you're talking about Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, and they got Neusmeyer and Miller Moss, who had 6 touchdown passes in the Holiday Bowl against Louisville. This defensive coaching staff for USC is a major upgrade. And I think Lincoln Riley might even slow down the tempo of his offense a little bit to help the defense play complementary football. Because that's one weakness Lincoln Riley's always had. His defenses aren't very good. And some of that is because of the way his teams play up-tempo offense. So slow it down a little bit. I think slow the tempo down a little bit, and that's going to help Dan Tomlin's defense. In 1 year, Dan Tomlin took that UCLA defense from 87th to 11th in total D in the country. He can coach, and he's got some other upgrades on that defensive staff. I lean USC here, but I'm not going to do anything with this number sitting at 4.5. Tim, I might play something at 6 if it gets back there. I don't think we're going to see 7 again because that betting group that hit the plus 6 kind of ruined that for us. So those are my thoughts in that game. I really love the matchup on Sunday night, but I'm not going to get involved here taking the points with USC unless it goes back to 6. And that would just be a small bet because – I'll probably live bet the game as well, right? We might be able to get a better number if you just live bet the game too.
You also think about this, and you know, maybe this is cherry picking, but the last 2 season openers for Brian Kelly, losses to Florida State, mm-hmm. and then you think back to 2021, he went to Florida State as the head coach of Notre Dame, and they needed overtime to win a game that you were on, I believe, on this podcast. You took Florida State plus the points in that game. So history short, but one that hasn't been so fruitful for Brian Kelly in season openers. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back on the other side, we got a couple of Friday night games that we want to hit on, some best bets there. We'll rip through our favorite plays of the weekend. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Happy week 1 to all. We're not previewing the Thursday games, so wanted to keep this a little fresh. But we will hit on the Friday games, Matt. So a couple of Friday games. I know you've got big thoughts on Temple, Oklahoma, where the line is now sitting at 42 in favor of Boomer Sooner. But you actually do have a bet on FAU at Michigan State. Jonathan Smith comes in as the new head coach of the Spartans. He brings Aiden Childs from Oregon State with him. Michigan State was a complete disaster a year ago. I love the hire of Jonathan Smith. He also went out and got Joe Rossi to come over to be his defensive coordinator, a very successful D coordinator at Minnesota. Tom Herman, head coach at FAU. This has been a number that has been bet up. The total has also been bet down. At record, it sits Michigan State 14, total 45 in this game. It'll be on Big Ten Network on Friday night at 7 o'clock Eastern.
You know, Florida Atlantic's not a bad team. There are some aspects about the Owls I kind of like, and the quarterback position's not in bad shape for the Owls. Tom Herman coach team. Michigan State up to a 14-point favorite, which I think is about right, total of 45. Jonathan Smith is a great hire by Michigan State. Got to clean up that mess, and he will. And Aiden Childs, perfect quarterback, you know, to bring along as a transfer from Oregon State. Tim, I'm sure you saw Aiden Childs last week, and he's saying, bet the over, bet the over. I don't know if he's talking about the season win total, the over in this game, laying the points with the Spartans. But what I'm going to do with this game, I do like Michigan State, and I think Jonathan Smith is going to get a big win here. But, you know, I don't like to lay these type of numbers. I'm going to go a half unit, Michigan State minus 14, and a half unit over the total of 45. And I think this Michigan State offense can be better than some people expect. You know, when I was doing the Big Ten breakdowns for the VSIN College Football Betting Guide, you look at Michigan State on paper and you don't see a lot of talent. But there's more talent there than meets the eye, and I think Jonathan Smith is going to coach him up. And I don't believe the Spartans are the worst team in that conference. I think it's Northwestern or Illinois talking about the worst teams in the Big Ten, and Michigan State's not going to be that bad. So let's go that with that's the way I'm going to go with a bet on that game. I do like Michigan State a little bit, but not easy to lay the 14. Someone is going to kind of play that half unit with the over 45.
I believe you have a saying, and you have many sayings, Matt, but one of them is don't expect bad teams to do good things. I believe that is a phrase that you have coined.
That's true.
Well, I'm going to expect a bad team to do good things on Friday night.
Stanford
at home on the farm, 10:30 Eastern. Our colleague Stormy Bonatoni will be on the sidelines for this game on ESPN. I was able to grab 10 this week. Could have got a 10.5 at DraftKings. It's now 9. There is a 9.5 out there at South Point. I'm going to take the Cardinal. I know it's a worse number. This is a team that is top 5 in the country in returning production. Not all returning production is created equal. This team was not very good from a year ago, but I really like Troy Taylor as a head coach, and I just think this is kind of a funky spot, late night game here for Stanford. Ashton Daniels, I'd like to see him clean up some things, but an athletic quarterback, was able to, you know, rush for 460 yards last year, had some sacks that dinged his numbers. But if he can clean up things a little bit, Matt, from a accuracy standpoint, I think he's an intriguing quarterback there. And you look at, you know, Io Manor, who had the monster game against Colorado, and Stanford came back from, you know, 30 down to win that game in double overtime. This team brings back a ton from a year ago. They do lose Emmett Smith's son, EJ Smith. I think he dealt with some injuries last year, but he's moved on. You know, TCU's a team that JVT, who wrote up the Big 12 for our VSIN guide, Matt, was pretty high on TCU, thought the ceiling was high for them. But I need to believe it. If, you know, I need to see it if I'm going to believe it. And I think Troy Taylor's going to have his team ready to go. I don't know if they can win this game outright, Matt, but I think a really good opportunity on a Friday night for Stanford to keep things competitive. Once again, I don't think we're getting back to 10. That was the number I was able to grab earlier this week. But even at 9.5, 9, I still would look towards the Cardinal here. So I'm going to roll with the Cardinal late night on Friday as one of my best bets against TCU.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I know the number was 10, 10.5 out there at one point. That's gone. Now it's 9, 9.5. But I like Troy Taylor a lot too. Now, he had a 3-9 record in his first year. But Stanford, I thought, improved. I like him a lot as a coach. You bring, like you said, you bring back Ashton Daniels, the quarterback, and he's got some playmakers around him. A lot of starters back, too. I think, you know, it's always tricky counting returning starters in this era with so many transfers. And but Stanford legit got 15 starters back, and maybe 16, depending how you count. And I like it. I like the home dog here, too. Now, one thing, Tim, we always got to keep this in mind. Stanford really doesn't have much of a home field advantage.
Nope.
And that's a bit of a downer when you're looking at home dogs like this. But I think it's a lot for TCU to be laying here on the road as well. And I'm going to put in a conditional play here, just like I did last week. And I said if New Mexico got to 14 last week, I was going to play it on the podcast. And New Mexico got to 14, and I played it. Well, if Stanford gets to 10, I am going to play Stanford at plus 10. Yeah.
All right, that is Friday night. We won't break down Western Michigan and Wisconsin, which the number sits at 24. Let's run through some of our favorite plays that we haven't hit on yet on Saturday, and we will go to a game in Houston, Texas, Matt, as the Texans are the Cougars, not the Texans. I would probably be on the Texans if this was them laying 2.5. They host UNLV, And on Wednesday night, Caesars William Hill touched three in favor of Houston when it felt like initially the market was moving towards pick. Right now, consensus 2.5 out there. Maybe we get a 3 to show up at some point in favor of Houston. Curious which way you're going. Houston is a team that I bet under their Big 12 win total this year. Once again, we've said a lot of these, a lot of good coaching hires. I think the Willie Fritz hire was very good, but I think UNLV is certainly a live dog here on the road. This game on FS1, 7 o'clock Eastern. What do you make of UNLV at Houston?
Intriguing matchup, actually. And it's going to be weird watching Houston football and not seeing Dana Holgorsen so discombobulated and disheveled on the sideline while his team underachieves. But Houston, 2.5-point favorite. It was 1.5 early this week. A little bit of money came in on the home team, and I know it's a rebuild. But I don't have any faith in very little faith, let's put it that way, in the Rebels going on the road and winning this game. I know Barry Odom's done a great job making the Rebels more competitive. But, Tim, the quarterback situation concerns me. UNLV's had three quarterbacks competing for the job. From what I understand in camp, none of them have been really standouts. And if you're going to go on the road and win a game like this and you don't know who your quarterback is, that's kind of problematic. That's keeping me off the UNLV side. I'd like to play Houston, but I think there's a chance this Houston team's going to be horrible. So it's Houston or pass for me, though, at less than 3. And I'm going to monitor this situation a little bit more this weekend. But I think it's a really interesting game.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why ultimately I played under conference win totals for Houston as opposed to the season long win total, just so it gives you a little more wiggle room from that perspective. But yeah, Haj Malik Williams from Campbell, Matt Saluka from Holy Cross, and then Cameron Friel all got the oar on the depth chart there for UNLV. So what's the old saying, Matt? If you have two quarterbacks, you have none. What about if you have three quarterbacks? Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean for Barry Odom's squad and Brennan Marion running the go-go offense. Last week, you mentioned this, Matt, that you and I laid the lumber with Hawaii, and it was not pretty. They got the win 35-14, but really the cover was an easy one if you took the points with Delaware State. That game closed around 41. I'm curious to hear your side on this one because I try not to overreact to what we saw, especially in week zero. And it was a hurricane, clear look-ahead spot to UCLA, and I was kicking myself for getting involved with such a big number. And this is a UCLA team that has seen a lot of under money hit the market. I have some under 5.5 wins on UCLA for the season, that market now at 5 or 4.5. 7:30 Eastern CBS, 1:30 Hawaii time. So very rare do you see the sun shining on a Hawaii game, but that's what we're going to get there on Saturday. So Timmy Chang's squad catching 14. I would imagine, based off of what we heard on the broadcast, that Stephen McBride will not play in this game. Eric Bieniemy, now the offensive coordinator for UCLA after a failed year with the Washington Commanders. Were you turned off by what you saw from the Rainbow Warriors last Saturday night?
Yes. That's it.
All right, UCLA minus 14. No, lock it up.
You know what? Also, I think hurricane's a bit of an overstatement, Tim. Timmy Chang might have called it a hurricane because his passing offense looked so poor last week. But from what I gather, it was winds gusting to 25, 30 miles an hour, and there was some rain that blew in at some point during the game. Not quite a hurricane, but it was some weather that Hawaii had to deal with. And, you know, Braden Shager, the quarterback, not too sharp. 17 for 34, 203 yards. He had the 2 touchdowns. He was sacked once. It just I didn't see a lot of – my biggest problem is I didn't see a lot of talent, like top-end type of talent on the field for Hawaii. I know the recruiting has been down a little bit in recent years. And I don't think Timmy Chang's done a lot here to upgrade the talent to where you would think maybe a team like UCLA can outclass Hawaii. And I don't know how much faith I've got in the Bruins coaching staff, Deshaun Foster, and then you're talking about Eric Bieniemy coming from the NFL, who that adjustment might be a little bit trickier than some people think. Just because he's coached in the NFL doesn't mean he's going to roll into college and be a great offensive coordinator right away. I think Ethan Garbers, typically not the type of quarterback you want to lay two touchdowns with on the road. Probably not a lot of explosive plays out of this UCLA offense, but I am not going to play Hawaii here, Tim. And you know, a lot of times I like to play the Rainbow Warriors as home dogs in these type of games, but I can't do it. Just a lack of talent. And I thought the offense was a big disappointment last week. You're talking about a Delaware State team that won one game the previous year, is picked to finish last in one of the worst, maybe the worst football conference on the planet, the MEAC. They had trouble traveling out to the islands. Everything working against Delaware State last week. The Hornets had the ball in a tie game in the third quarter. Tim, I don't know. A lot of times, you know, you want to buy on bad news. You want to bet on a team off a crappy performance because you think that team's going to bounce back. And you want to, maybe the market's down on them, and that's when you want to buy. But I can't. I didn't see anything out of Hawaii that made me say, I want to play them here this week as dogs. And maybe I'm going to regret that because, you know, we also have big questions about UCLA. And this is I'm pretty sure that you bet the win total. I did play UCLA under 5 wins. I think you did too, right?
Yeah, I was able to get, fortunately, earlier in the summer under 5.5, and then I'm over 4.5 for Hawaii. So if Hawaii won this game outright, it would be lovely for my futures portfolio. So maybe that's just the way I ride with it. I would lean Hawaii, maybe, you know, getting them at what seemed to be their worst, but you're still not getting this game really as a bargain. DraftKings opened up 18.5 over the summer. So you've seen some market correction, most notably with Nevada, Troy, and Florida State, Boston College from a week zero result. But, you know, that would be my lean here. Speaking of week zero, Matt.
Hey, Tim. Yeah, go ahead. I want to say this quickly. This is kind of similar to last year's Stanford-Hawaii game.
Yep.
Where Hawaii was really not as competitive as we expected and lost that game 37-24 at home.
So speaking of week zero, Matt, This is put a clothespin on your nose type of game, and I think your partner on VSiN tonight is thinking the same. So Georgia Tech gets the massive win over in Ireland on Saturday as a 10.5-point underdog. Sharp money came in on Georgia Tech all throughout the week, and it was right. That was the only line move that was accurate from a side perspective. Georgia Tech comes back home, and they have to take on Georgia State, a 8 o'clock Eastern game in Atlanta. Georgia State, for those unaware, lost their head coach, Sean Elliott, in the middle of spring practice. He said, I'm out. I'm going to South Carolina. So a lot of pieces walked out the door. Darren Granger left. He is he has moved on, I believe, to the NFL or professional football or whatever. They also lost their top running back to Missouri. So a lot of pieces walked out. I just, from a situational standpoint, Matt, and the market kind of going nuts on the Georgia Tech win, I'm going to take a half unit and play Georgia State plus 11.5 in the first half, and the other half play at plus 21 for the game and hope that it is a letdown. Travel back from Georgia Tech. I'm sure they partied their ass off after getting that win. And, you know, they have an ACC game on deck against Syracuse. So hopefully this is a letdown spot. I remember back in 2012, Matt, Notre Dame went over to Ireland. They played Navy. They crushed them. They came back home and played your Purdue Boilermakers and needed a last-second field goal to win that game 20-17. So Georgia State, not a team that I'm looking to bet often this year in the Sun Belt, but I just thought situationally was a spot that I needed to grab those three touchdowns. And we'll see if Georgia Tech just wants to get out of there with a simple victory and move on to Syracuse.
No, that's a good handicap, and I agree with the situational angle on that. I didn't play it yet. I might play it, but that's definitely a play I could get behind because the situation screams a play on Georgia State there.
Well, this will be a game that screams me texting you at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. What was I thinking, Matt? They're terrible. I can't believe I did this.
Well, I tell you what, instead of texting me, text Wes Reynolds because he's going to be on the game too. So you guys can commiserate on that one.
A couple more games, actually two late night games. One, I'm going to lay a number and one, I'm going to take it. Both these games taking place at 10:30 Eastern time and both involving Mountain West teams. So I'll go through these quickly. Matt, New Mexico at Arizona. Bronco Mendenhall's squad, you mentioned it, was a winner for you. I ended up tailing that play, took the 14 when it hit 14 with New Mexico. And, you know, they probably should have won that game outright against Montana State. However, they gave up 560 plus yards of offense. And Dino Babers is now the new offensive coordinator of Arizona. Brent Brennan, the new head coach. They were able to keep Noah Fifita, their quarterback. They brought in New Mexico's running back, who was an absolute stud from a year ago. Matt, you're going to smack me in the face, but I'm going to lay 30.5 here with Arizona against New Mexico late night there in the Brent Brennan debut. Yeah. And then also at the same time, Wyoming's at Arizona State. I know you have a strong, passionate love for Marcus Arroyo, former UNLV head coach. He's now the offensive coordinator of Arizona State. This was a game that JVT kind of tipped me off on. He's very high on Wyoming this year. He has a long shot ticket on them to win the Mountain West. And yes, Craig Bohl left. However, they stayed in house. They brought in Jay Sauvel, or promoted him from within. You're getting a full touchdown out there with the Pokes. I don't know if Arizona State is worthy of being a full touchdown against a decent Mountain West squad. So I'm going to take the Pokes plus the 7. So I'm going to fade New Mexico, but take Wyoming as two best bets. Arizona minus 30.5, which is out there at DraftKings, and then 7 out there across the market with the Wyoming Cowboys at Arizona State.
You know, it's funny. We hadn't talked about these two games before we did the podcast, but I don't blame you for laying the points with Arizona. I think the Lobos left it all on the field last week against Montana State. As far as Wyoming, that's the Cowboys are dogs I'm thinking about playing in that late game in Tempe as well. Not real impressed by what I've read about the Arizona State offense. You know, I don't like the coordinator, but what I've read about the quarterbacks in camp, and I do like Wyoming as an under-the-radar tough team in the Mountain West, too, and I see a 7.5 out there offshore.
Ooh.
So Wyoming's probably going to be a play for me. As of this podcast, I'm not going to make it an official play, but you know, Tim, when we get to Saturday, we end up betting a lot more games, sometimes more than we talk about on this podcast, and Wyoming's probably going to be a bet for me late Saturday night.
All right, running through the board real quickly, just I'll pepper a couple games if you have any thoughts before we give you our best bet recap. We have not mentioned Michigan taking on Fresno State. The Jeb Tedford era is over at Fresno. Michigan, of course, moving on to Sherrone Moore as Harbaugh leaves to go to the Chargers. We don't know who the starting quarterback will be. More than likely, it will be Alex Orji for the Michigan Wolverines. A full 21 out there for the Wolverines. This will be the primetime game on ABC. Any thoughts on Fresno State at Michigan? Total had come down to 45.5, has now bumped back up to around 46.
One thought I have is a new quarterback for Michigan, Alex Orji. His name is going to be fun for headline writers. I saw where the college version of Pro Football Focus ranked Alex Orji the 15th best quarterback in the 18-team Big Ten. Now, he's going to have to be better than that, or Michigan's in for a long season. 13 NFL draft picks, most of any college program. Half your coaching staff is gone. Obviously, Jim Harbaugh bolts for the Chargers. You got this dark cloud of controversy hanging over the Michigan program. Maybe my best bet, I think, of college football futures is Michigan under the win total of 9. I don't see how this team gets to 10-2. That's going to be a bet that you either win or push. The Michigan defense is going to be legit. So many question marks on that offense. Fresno State did score 2 fourth quarter touchdowns and beat Purdue 39-35 on the road in the opener last year. So the Bulldogs went on the road and won a Big Ten game. I don't know if they're going to do it here. I would lean Fresno getting the points. I think the one thing that's scaring me away from this, Tim, is I do think this Michigan defense is legit. Like Fresno's going to have a tough time getting much done offensively. So I can see why the totals come down from 48 to 45.5 in a couple of spots.
Yeah, and I know there were some folks out there who banged the first half under. That was 24. It's now down to 23.5 at most shops. So some first half under money coming in. Matt, Monday night we'll wrap up week one with Florida State taking on Boston College. Bill O'Brien takes over as the head coach of Boston College. That opened up the door for Chip Kelly to go to Ohio State. Ohio State, by the way, just a 7-touchdown favorite this weekend against Akron. Is this a spot where the market's gone too crazy, as this was north of three touchdowns before they played in Ireland, and now 16.5 pretty much market-wide, except where you sit at Circa at 17. Is this a buy-low opportunity for Florida State, or did you see some serious issues with the Noles last Saturday in Ireland?
I did see some issues, but again, it's the first game, and sometimes a team can make its most improvement right from game one to game two, so you don't want to overreact to what you see in one game. My expectations for Florida State were much lower than most people, so I really wasn't that surprised with what happened in the Georgia Tech game a week ago. I lean here BC plus 17, but it's tough to make this bet now, Tim, when you could have had three full touchdowns or a little bit more, and you missed the number. So I think BC is the sharp side in this game for the right reasons.
All right, let's get to it to close out the podcast.
Best bet recap.
All right, let's start with you, Matt. Run through your official plays for week one of the college football season.
All right, Tim, let's do it. And let's start with that Friday night game, Michigan State. And we're going to go a half unit on Spartans minus 14. Half unit on over the total of 45. Trying to update my screen here. Yeah, 14 and 45, half unit each, so that's one play. If Stanford gets to 10, I will make that an official play. Right now it's 9.5, but I need 10 for Stanford to be a play on this podcast. I did bet West Virginia plus 8.5. I think 8 might be, eight might be the best number. Of course, I'd still play plus 8 on West Virginia. So we're going to go with the home dog there. Florida plus 3, and again, if 2.5 is all you can find, buy it to 3. But, Tim, I think some threes are going to pop up on Saturday in this game. If I'm wrong, you can buy it to 3, but I've already bet Florida plus 3. That's a play for me, even though it's all 2.5 on the market now. Notre Dame, Texas A&M, under 46.5. You can certainly still find that number out there at a few spots. And, you know, go ahead and put me down for Wyoming plus 7 now, because I know I'm going to bet that on Saturday night. I'm going to wait for 7.5, you know, or see if a slightly better number pops up here in Vegas. But go ahead and put me down for plus 7, because that's a dog I do like in the game against Arizona State.
All right, a lot of common plays. Let's run through them for me. Stanford, I played 10. 9.5 now. That'll be an official play. I'll just say, regardless of the number, 9.5 is out there right now. So I think Stanford could be live on Friday night. I'm with you on Notre Dame A&M under 46.5. Florida plus hopefully 3. Same, echoed the sentiment. Let's be patient there. Let's also be patient with Clemson. I will take 14 if we get there. I think you mentioned this as well. If it doesn't touch 14, not an official play.
Right.
And then a little off the board, let's go Georgia State, half unit first half, plus 11.5, half unit full game, 21. The Pokes of Wyoming, plus 7 at Arizona State. And then Arizona, we're going to lay the 30.5 against New Mexico. So those will be my official plays here for week one of the college football season, Matt.
Tim, yeah, put me down. If Clemson hits 14, that's going to be a play for me too. And we talked about that when I linked earlier. So 13.5, no, 14. If that pops up, and I think it will, I'll play the Tigers there. Also, you know, I want to mention, check out the extra board on Saturday. There's a bunch of games on that extra board that are probably going to be worth playing. And I think DraftKings, only book that puts up early numbers on those. The rest of the numbers are going to be up Saturday morning. I got my eye on some of those matchups as well. And how about throw out a few futures bets, because a lot of people ask, you know, what do you like on futures? I'll tell you, Michigan under 9, UCLA under 5. I like Iowa over 8, Indiana over 5.5. I'm going to go two teams to make the playoff, Ole Miss to make the playoff and Penn State to make the playoff. Both of those, I think, are really good bets. I also played Ole Miss over 9.5 wins. But, Tim, this is the third year in a row I played the Rebels over the win total. And 2 years it was 2 years ago, it was 6.5. Last year, I think it was 7.5. And now the inflation is 9.5. But I still think this is going to be a 10-win Ole Miss team.
Yeah, and I've tweeted out all the plays from the podcast, all the futures plays. Some of them have moved. But one cross-sport parlay that I did talk about and wrote it up for the updated VSiN guide, it's one that I think you would agree with. You can get Oregon at minus $3 to make the playoff, and I paired them with the Philadelphia Eagles to win the NFC East.
And nice.
I think that is – I got it at plus 154. You can get a plus 140 now. I really like that play. And I also tweeted out all my bets for this season. And the last win total that I added was Indiana over 5.5 wins like you did. And Notre Dame over 5.5 home wins, plus 140 at DraftKings. All right, let's have ourselves a good week. And like Matt said, make sure you check out that extra board. Washington laying 26 against Weber State, Matt. Jed Fish, even though he did go, I believe, 11-3 ATS last year.
I actually like Washington this season more than most people do.
All right, so maybe I'll stay off of that one. But it'll be a fun week nonetheless. I'll be back with Adam Burke early on in the week. And then Matt and I will reconvene next week, hopefully with a bunch of winners from week one to talk week two. For Matt Eubanks, I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.